Guilty movie pleasure fans, a dapper British man once said, "Manners maketh man." Because today we are talking Kingsman: The Secret Service.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Guilty Movie Pleasure.
Just, nope. Worst, I can't
even
Ben,
do the dance today.
That was Ben declared that to be the worst intro he's ever done.
Well, I think, if I remember right, last week was the best intro I've ever done.
So peaks and valleys here at Guilty
Movie
Pleasures.
You know, we want to keep me humble.
Yep.
And,
you're doing it yourself, I guess?
I want to keep
myself... No one tells you what to do.
I want to keep myself humble. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Guilty Movie Pleasures this week. I'm Ben Begley, and with me, as always, is Jesse McIntosh.
I'm Jesse McIntosh.
Yeah,
what's up?
Yeah, I like to...
World.
I like to confuse you with whether or not I'm going to say your name or you have
to
say it.
Yeah, it's a nice... There's like a brief ellipses. I could... We're like right in between. It was like two dots.
Jesse McIntosh.
You go for it. Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. All right. Well, welcome, everybody. Today, in honor of Kingsman: The Golden Circle coming out this Friday, we are talking Kingsman: The Secret Service, which before anybody... Holy shit. All right. If I get a comment on the YouTube channel or on Twitter that says, this is not guilty at all, I already tweeted out, I don't think this movie is guilty.
Over under two people say
at least. Because like, no one's going to watch it.
No one's going to watch. They just see it.
Yep.
Kingsman is a guilty movie pleasure, and they're just going
to
freak out.
There are absurd elements, but it's supposed to be absurd. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing to me guilty about it. Now you're probably wondering, well, why are you talking about it on Guilty Movie Pleasures? Because every once in a while, we just want to talk about something that's batshit crazy and awesome, and that deserves more people to see it than already have. And then other times, we just break the rules, like when we've done Die Hard for Christmas sometimes before. That's a perfect action film. Every once in a while, we need to just take a break and talk about something amazing. Because this movie, to me, rewatching it, I will say I saw it in theaters and I loved it. I didn't know what to expect. I loved First Class. I loved Kick-Ass. I was a big fan of Matthew Vaughn. And then I saw this, and the church battle scene was one of the most shocking, still to this day, is one of the most shocking action sequences I've ever seen. I was watching it in theaters with my wife, and I was like, holy fuck, I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. And it's one of the most batshit fun spy movies I've seen ever. And rewatching it last night, I realized it's nearly, in my opinion, nearly perfect in its execution of what it's trying to be, and of basically being a Bond, an old classic Bond film turned up to 11. And I really dig this movie, so there's nothing guilty about it. I just wanted to talk about it because it's awesome, and it has some ridiculous moments that could fall under guilty if it was another movie.
Sure.
Makes sense.
There you go.
What do you think, Jesse? You've never seen this.
I'd never seen it, but I also just want to reiterate what Ben said, that this is our goddamn show, and we'll do whatever we want. I don't feel that strongly about it, but I think it's funny.
What if every week we started getting more aggressive? Like,
hey,
fuck off.
Listen here.
Next week I'm doing Shawshank Redemption. Fuck you. It's guilty.
Just
start picking really like clear, like all just hitting all of the AFI top 100 on our show just to piss people off.
Are they doing Citizen Kane this week? Why would they do that?
Fucking Rosebud. Remember that scene with the... I've never actually seen Citizen Kane. I'm an asshole.
You know what? You're not alone.
Other
people in this world have not seen it as well.
The ending's been spoiled. It's like watching, you know, Sixth Sense and knowing about Bruce Willis. I won't say it just in case.
You can say it. People, if you haven't seen Sixth Sense by now...
Yeah, there's certain movies where there's like a cap.
Sure.
Like, Renee hasn't seen The Usual Suspects yet, and I've hinted at Kaiser Sose, and she's still just... I think that's a big enough thing that you really have to understand the context of the film to know the spoiler.
Oh, sure. I also, like, at this point, those movies I can't rewatch alone. I have to rewatch them with someone who hasn't seen it, because then it's, like, re-experiencing the film.
Because otherwise you're just like,
yeah.
It's
but
amazing,
so,
but anyway. So
that's,
yeah.
No, but that's our list moving forward.
Yep.
Usual AFI. Suspects, Shawshank Redemption, Citizen Kane, in whatever order you want, because we're not tyrants.
No, we'll let you vote.
Yeah.
So what did you think? Did you have any interest? How did you miss it? Is this in your wheelhouse? Like, what?
It is a little bit. I don't know. For whatever reason, when it came out in theaters, it was under my radar, and I'm not sure why. And it wasn't until it was out of theaters that I had heard so many people talking about it.
I think the key here that I'm realizing is that you have a life and do other things other than see movies. And I pretty much fill my free time with, like, when Renee's like, hey, you should go do something else. I'm like, Yeah, but I have 2 hours. I'm going to go to a movie.
Whether or not I have a life is currently under investigation. So I can't speak on it.
Your house was wired at that moment. So yeah, there's some legal ramifications if you do talk about it.
But I do. So I heard the glowing reviews about this movie, and it was always something that I wanted to see, and it was never something that either was like on the top of my list when I was ready to sit down and watch a movie, or just for some reason I missed it.
Yeah.
Actually my wife had seen it and she told me how great it was.
Nice.
And I was like, all right, well, you know,
that's always tough when like, when your significant other has seen a movie that you really wanted to see. Like for me, I will watch it, but Renee, like I saw Ex Machina and a few other amazing films without her, and she still hasn't to this day seen him because she's just like, well, you already saw it. So anytime I bring it out, I'm like, I'll watch it again. She's like, you already saw it. I'm like, yeah, but it's fucking awesome.
So here's the moral there is you should start lying to Renee what you do in your free time so that you can enjoy things together.
It's just, I've been going to a lot of yoga, and then she'd be like, why aren't you more, why can't you touch your toes yet?
Say it's not working.
It's just yoga doesn't work.
Yoga doesn't work.
Doesn't work for everybody.
That's proof in the pudding.
Before we go and just piss off all yoga people, it does actually work.
There's a huge crossover between our audience and yoga enthusiasts.
They play our podcasts at some yoga classes.
That's a fact.
When it's people who are, they're really trying to focus and tune out annoying things, they play our show.
Tell us we're wrong. You can't.
You can't.
You haven't been to every yoga class. You don't know.
So what do you think of the movie, watching it now after all the buildup? Because there wasn't a lot of hype when I saw it, but you've had a ton of hype.
I've had a ton of hype, and I fucking loved this movie.
Yes!
This is an amazing movie.
Yes! I get so happy when we're on the same page, because sometimes we're not, and I like that too, but it's just more fun when we're on the same page.
Yeah, this movie's awesome.
Isn't
it? The only thing that sucks about this movie is Samuel L. Jackson's lisp.
No. You think so?
Yeah.
Oh, see, rewatching it, I love his lisp, because otherwise, knowing Sam Jackson, it would have just been...
Sure.
He would have been a more badass villain, and his villain is the epitome of not badass. It's like if Mark Zuckerberg decided to destroy the population with this kind of device. Uh-huh. So that's why I like that he had this quirky, weird vulnerability and like his aversion to violence and the vomiting. I knew as soon as it happened, I laughed like so hard because I was like, Jesse's going to be pissed.
Oh, I wasn't pissed. I just knew.
That was one of the most well-earned vomits on screen.
I guess. It was, so the last like 5 minutes of the movie, a lot of things happen where you're like, wait, what? Like the vomit and the ass fucking, out of nowhere.
Oh, well, we'll get to that. But I think, to me, I think that was, and the director even said this, that it's making fun of Bond movies, how he always bangs a girl at the end of a Bond movie back in the 60s and 70s. And then they took that to like 11. So instead of just like Die Another Day, or not Die Another Day, The World Is Not Enough, Pierce Brosnan's Bond, and he's having sex with Christmas Jones or whatever her name was Christmas something, and he's like, and they're post coitus, and he's like, I'm disappointed, I was told Christmas only comes I was told Christmas only comes once a year. And so it's like insinuating he just made her orgasm a bunch of times, and so they're making fun of that kind of sexual innuendo, but just making it very blunt and butt sex.
Sure And it's so, I just mean like in the context
of
the movie.
It comes out of nowhere.
Like, so he has this, like, partner in crime going through the...
Who you kind of think might be his love interest.
Right, and there's no chemistry, and they never make mention of anything between the two of them. But then he, like, all of a sudden turns into Romeo when he meets this imprisoned princess.
It would have been cool to have a little bit of a Moneypenny vibe with her. Like, Bond and Moneypenny in the new ones flirt a lot. It would be cool to have...
Yeah.
Even if it's just a fun, flirty vibe.
Yeah, just some banter.
Yeah.
But they didn't even have that. They were just like...
The one thing rewatching it, I would say, is that Roxy, his kind of partner, gets kind of sidelined, especially in the end when they literally just kind of fly her away.
Yeah.
And make her... Sure, her scene is cool shooting a satellite out of space, but she doesn't get to do anything. I don't even know if she's in the sequel. I hope so, because I think she's cool, but I don't think so. I don't think she's going
to
be.
Well, and also, like, it was kind of strange to me, and that we can get into all of this later, but, like, it was strange that she had such a, like, specific vulnerability as far as...
And then that's the thing they choose to...
Yeah, but, like, if you're choosing one person out of everyone in the world to be a Kingsman, like, you could probably find someone that didn't have a fear of something that you're going to have to do
but
all the
time. But she conquered it in that
moment.
She
sure did, yeah.
Now, so, the tone of it and everything, so other than the lisp...
Yeah, the lisp was
weird. How great are the action scenes, man?
Oh,
they're so...
They're, amazing. They're so well shot.
They're some of the best action scenes I've seen in like 10 years.
They're just fascinating.
Because they're the right amount of campy but still badass. Like when we talked about Machete and how the action scenes just get too campy to the point where it's not like well choreographed anymore. Yeah. These are incredibly well choreographed. They have like hints of classic comedies to them when they speed up and slow down. And there's such a style to this where a lot of action films nowadays are just shaky, shaky, shaky. I can't see what the fuck's happening. And this, specifically the church scene, which we were going to show you, but then we're not sure if it's way too violent for Popcorn Talk. So just watch the Kingsman in church shootout craziness.
The director's cut of our podcast is going to contain that.
Yeah. But that scene alone, they make it look like it's all one shot, even though they hide some edits there. But it's directed so well, the action sequence.
It's such a cool mix of like everything that makes an action sequence great. You talked about the handheld, like there is a shaky cam and there is like slow down and speed up and there is
but it's not Paul Greengrass,
but it's not shaking, but it's all, you can consume everything in it. Mm-hmm. And there is that element that you talked about of like this feels like one shot, and there is like cool utilization of weapons and gymnastics and karate and like all types of weapons. Like it's just everything that you can appreciate out of an action sequence,
and specifically a spy movie.
Oh, too. Totally. Yeah. So, I mean, I thought the action sequences, like they could have made the movie. It could have been a shitty movie with cool action sequences, but I thought it was just a really nice compliment to a really well done movie.
Yeah. It's everything. And I think that the flipping the spy movie on its head and making it about this kind of cockney, rough and tough kid that becomes a spy instead of this polished gentleman, because the Bond movies are basically the Harry Harts of the world becoming Bond, you know, and to have that and to have this message of like, you're better than what you're born into. You're better than what you've been raised in and your surroundings. You can transcend. And it's not about talking more, proper or anything like that. It's just about carrying yourself and being, he said something really great that I meant to write down, where he said that, the true wisdom or something is being comfortable in your own skin or something like that. It was great. I'll remember it at some point. But I dig this movie so fucking much. And it never verges on spoofing spy movies either. It just kind of has its own style, and that's why it's not a spoof. Like it has all the gadgets that all the classic Bond movies do, but then it does it with its own twist. That just is so fun. But let's do the plot in under 3 minutes. This is obviously going to be a love fest for this movie because it's fucking great. So you ready in the booth, sir, for the 3 minutes, Steve? Yes, sir. All right. So we have a prologue. I believe it's in 1997 where they're going into battle, one of the final training rounds, and we find out that Colin Firth is there as Harry Hart and Merlin, and we have Eggsy's father gets killed in battle. He sacrifices himself to save Colin Firth. Eggsy's given this pin saying, hey, if you ever need anything, and the mom's like, I don't need anything, I want my husband back, and she leaves. Cut to, he's now, Eggsy's an adult, and he's kind of a rough and tumble kid, and cut to the professor
is kidnapped, and one of the Kingsmen comes in to save the professor, and he cuts up all the guys who are who are keeping him hostage, and then the Samuel L. Jackson's woman comes in,
Gazelle.
And she fights him and kills him, and then the Kingsmen have a funeral, and they're like, we got to replace this guy.
Yep, and then that's where we are intro to Eggsy now, where his mom stayed in this real jerk, and he has a creepy brother or something that's hanging around. It's real weird.
Yep.
And he has these bully kids that are picking on him and all this stuff, so he steals the car. He ends up saving the cat for real, which we'll get into in that moment. Crashes into another cop car. He gets taken to jail. Then he calls the number, and immediately he's let out of prison. Colin Firth, Harry Hart, comes and picks him up, starts saying, hey, we're going to train you. He goes, and there's these dickheads there. There's the kids from all the Oxford and all these other hoity-toity Ivy Leagues, and he's just a kid that maybe graduated high school. And they're introducing the beds are drowning him.
One of the kids
the
knows
beds
that
are drowning
the beds are drowning. One of the kids realized that you can breathe out of the toilet if you take the shower head and make a suction. And then Eggsy punches through the double window, and that's their first test, and one of the people died. But we find out later they didn't die.
Yeah. So then, then Harry Hart starts finding out that he goes and finds the professor, a.k.a. Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill. His head explodes. They're like, what happened? Harry's in a coma for a little bit. Then there's more training sequences. They get a dog.
He meets meets Samuel L. Jackson. He goes to he donates to the gala. He meets Samuel L. Jackson. Samuel L. Jackson decides
a private meal over McDonald's.
Yep, and they're like they're both feeling each other out. They both sort of know what's going on. Samuel L. Jackson goes to the tailor. They have that same moment again. They're both spying on each other.
Yep.
And then he goes to the church that Samuel L. Jackson has been targeting. So he goes to the church and
they turn on the device that all the SIM cards could because Samuel L. Jackson Valentine's character has given everybody free SIM cards, free internet, free cell phone service because it's all part of this. World population control
and it makes
them
very aggressive and it shuts off their ability to care about it and so they all murder. Kill each other and then
Harry gets shot in the face Eggsy's pissed off then Merlin realizes that it's just him and Roxy and Eggsy are the only ones because Michael Caine was put under the control
and Eggsy switches the poison and he dies. Yeah, he dies
then they go to the big snow mountain base they have an awesome shootout with a bunch of soldiers Gazelle and him are, and Eggsy are fighting while Roxy's trying to shoot the satellite out of space blows it up they bring over another satellite people start murdering each other. He kills Gazelle by cutting her with the poison, and then he throws the Gazelle's leg into Samuel Jackson and says, "This ain't that kind of movie, bruv." And then he goes and fucks a girl in the butt, and then we see him beat up his stepdad in the end. Yeah! Fucks a girl in the butt. I think there's a better way I could have put that.
Nope. That's the only way you could have... as accurately as possible described what happened.
I guess so. Let's get into this, because we got a lot to cover, and I want to make sure we do.
All right, let's do it.
So we start off... the opening's... a great way to show the stakes of the movie, that this movie is going to be campy and fun and ridiculous, but there is death on the line. There are lives on the line. Kingsman is a dangerous service. And I love the rescue scene. You pulled a sound clip from the guy talking to the professor about how great the whiskey was. And I've never heard a whiskey quite described this way. Can we play clip number one?
Honestly, this whiskey, it's amazing. You will shit.
I've had like Life cereal described that way. Like, honestly, this cereal is amazing. You will shit.
Yeah.
But I've never heard a whiskey described that way. And I guess maybe that's just...
because you drink shitty whiskey.
I guess.
It's either shitty whiskey or the whiskey will make you shit.
Make you shit.
Something... whiskey is shit involved in some way.
I mean, Bullet Bourbon, I think, is pretty good, but I've never shit after
it. No, you're wrong, because you haven't shit after
it. I've had acid reflux. Since I turned 30, there's a lot of acid reflux in there.
Yeah.
But I don't even have an improv with that or a true story.
Right.
Because it's so specific, but it's one of my favorite sound clips ever.
Just because you said that, I have a true story, but it's not based around this sound clip at all. But the first time I got, like, significant heartburn was on a booze cruise in Cancun, and it was a pirate ship theme. And so there was like a pirate show on the ship and like they were giving everything was free. So they were just giving out free. They were just coming by and handing you stuff and just drinking it. And like by the time we got to the portion where it was like the pirates had the battle and then all of a sudden it was like techno music and there was a dance party in the middle of the ship. Like as soon as that techno music hit, I thought I was going to have a heart attack and I felt like I was going to die and I was on a boat and there was nowhere I could go. Yeah. And I was just like overwhelmed with techno music and I couldn't do anything. I had to like go up top. Like we were on deck, but there was like a second level to on deck where you could look down on it.
Yeah.
So I went up there and just like lay down on a bench for the last half hour while everyone like had drunken dance orgies.
And then a guy came over to calm you down with a great glass of whiskey.
He sure
and
did.
Said,
honestly, this whiskey, it's amazing. You will shit.
And he said, maybe that's what I need to get it out of my system.
I don't want anything else.
I don't want anything else.
I just
want
to sleep.
How good is this first spy battle? So he shows up like Bond, and then instantly we're shown that this is going to be a different kind of spy movie where it's ultra-violent and take no prisoners, but still has that fun kind of gadgetry to it. The fact that he just opens the door and blasts a dude with a silencer like seven times, point blank.
And like starts shooting people through him.
Shoots
like,
a guy's finger off.
Yeah.
Shoots another guy in the head and then grabs the whiskey. It reminds me of that moment in Skyfall where Bond jumps from the wrecking train and then fixes his cufflink.
Yeah.
It's just there's this awesome debonair quality to these spies that, like, even in the most difficult of circumstances, they still have ultimate composure.
Sure. It was also so important, both in that scene and the, like, flashback scene in 97, that we see a Kingsman die.
Yeah.
Like that, I can't overstate how important that was for this movie to like show you that they're not invincible.
Yeah.
And this is like you said earlier, it gives it stakes. Like these are important, but extremely dangerous jobs.
Otherwise they're they're superhuman. Right, and especially when they make you believe that there's a lot of red herrings. There's a lot of, fake outs that happen during the training that make you think, oh shit, the the other girl died, she drowned, right. Oh man, there's no parachute, oh, they had to kill the dog, and then all of that you realize is just a mental game, or oh, you're going to get run over by the train, and I'm just glossing over that because it's important, but we'll get to it. But right. And I think that even every time when I first saw it, I didn't know that it was going to be a trick. I never caught on. I don't know if I was dumb, but I just was, they did it so well that each escalating thing until the reveal of the dog, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Did you think she was really dead until the dog reveal?
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. So you, and like that's what sets the training up, is that's the first test and someone dies. So you're basically like, they like the way they're eliminating people is killing them. This is going to be survival of the fittest. And if you can survive, if you can literally stay alive, then you are a member of the Kingsman.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is crazy.
Yeah.
And then it's such a great reveal because it's kind of fucked up at first when you're like, oh shit, they just like murdered an innocent 20 something.
Right.
Woman, like, what the hell? But then the reveal makes it that much better.
Sure.
Anyways, so because it gives you the stakes, but then it makes you feel better about yourself later on in a justified way. What's the lovely sound clip? Is that, that's not for a while, is it?
Which one?
Number two?
Let's hear it.
Let's hear it. What's number two?
I've had a rather emotional day.
Oh, shit.
Day, so whatever.
Damn it.
Beef
I skipped way ahead. Yeah. Here, cut it. Sorry. I lied. Okay, so Sam Jackson comes in with his lisp. Now, let's talk about this. Why didn't you like his lisp?
It was so put on. It was...
I loved it.
It was so...
The first time I saw it, I thought it was a little put on, and then the second time, I really just went with it.
It's a combination of things. One...
I keep double-fisting my Sprite
and
coffee. Yeah, dude. Which no one's ever...
Ben is drinking Sprite and coffee right now, by the way.
Keeping it classy.
Yeah, because we need something in here that's a guilty pleasure.
Manners make it man, and this is manners right here.
That's why I'm not drinking anything, because we need a balance. Of weird stuff and nothing.
In my defense, the water still tastes like poison to me.
Yeah, so...
Anyways, maybe it's just my mouth. Okay, so...
So a couple of things with Sam Jackson.
Because we're 7 minutes into the film.
Yeah. His lisp wasn't super... I don't want to say consistent, but there were just, like, when he wasn't lisping, he was Sam Jacksoning. And so it didn't, like, create a character. I think it felt like something where he was like, I'm gonna do a lisp to differentiate me from Sam Jackson. But when he wasn't lisping, he was in his Sam Jackson mode.
I guess I feel like there's only a couple times he dipped into Sam Jackson mode, and for me it was refreshing to at least have 75% of a performance not Sam Jackson.
Well, so mode. And I don't remember specifically what his performance was in Unbreakable, but he played a similarly like meek character, right?
Yeah, I gotta rewatch it because I love.
Or was
him
he
in
just?
That.
I don't know. He was.
Let's just.
I felt like he was, but
he's always
maybe
great.
Maybe I'm remembering it.
He's always great, but it was cool for me. I enjoyed the shit out of that. He was chewing up the scenery in a Bond villain type way, and like I said though, the first time it threw me off a little, but the second time I think because I was prepared for it, I was just like,
yeah,
I'm just gonna go with it.
I also wonder. I should have obviously looked all of this up beforehand, but Javier Bardem in the Bond movie that he was in, I don't remember which one was it.
That was
Spectre.
Oh my God, it's Spectre. I think no, it was Skyfall, wasn't it? They all blend
they've,
together.
They've blended together for me, but but he played his villain like very effeminately.
Yeah.
And I don't know which came first, but I wonder if this was if they're like truly borrowing from Bond.
Yeah, maybe
if he is borrowing a little bit from Javier Bardem.
We'll figure that out. I'm sure somebody will tweet at us.
We will.
Right now.
But it was more distracting than it was like. What I think he probably intended, which was character defining.
See, I guess, and like I said, I don't remember. I remember slightly being thrown off at first, but then the second time I just went with it and I loved it.
Sure.
So maybe also if you go in expecting a Sam Jackson performance and you get that, you might be a little like, huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right.
They also like, and this is not Sam Jackson's fault, but maybe they could have cast someone not Sam Jackson, who's a little meeker.
I still love him.
Yeah. He brings something that other people can't bring, but like, if you're going for meek, maybe not Sam Jackson.
The concept of this guy being, having such a severe aversion of violence, even though he's causing the most violent behavior, is such a cool twist to his character. And the fact that Gazelle, which I love that her name's Gazelle, by the way, if you haven't seen this movie, she has literal knife feet, blades for
I would
feet.
Love to know how she keeps those sharp, because she walks on those.
I think if I saw it right, what happens is they basically retract into like the little scoop things, and then when she can kick them out to stab and slice.
Yeah, because they're so sharp.
Super
they're
sharp.
The, maybe the sharpest material
because we
on
didn't
Earth.
Even talk about how the Kingsman dies in the beginning. All of a sudden something flashes and then he splits down the middle.
Yeah.
So her blades are sharp enough to cut through bone, brain matter, muscles, spine, yep. down the middle.
Yeah, without effort.
Her blades are Mortal Kombat fatality strong.
I'm sure her legs, her muscles are strong,
yes.
But, like, it took no effort to slice him down the middle.
It took, like, about as much as me, like, ripping this piece of paper, which I won't because it has my notes on it.
That's destructive.
Don't do it. That's just destructive. I'm going to keep
it. Come on, Ben.
So, we find out that there's a bioweapon that's been stolen. There's something going on. There's been some hints of it tried out in little villages. We don't know exactly yet. They're debating Harry's replacement. I forget the guy's name.
Lancelot's
replacement. And then Eggsy's introduced in the world's worst living conditions. And like I said, he has, like, the dad and then, like, the stepdad, like, hints at having a three-way with his mom with, like, this creepy dude that's just sitting in the corner. It's the worst.
So
and the poor baby in the pack and play. Now that I'm a dad, like, I'm really affected by children in distress. And that baby in that circumstance, I'm so glad that they redeem it by the end because it's just, like, it's an awful place for a child.
Yeah, but also, like, this is another thing the movie just fucking nailed, was in the beginning when we meet this family.
Yeah.
It's a nice family. And then how the death of the father derailed both of their situations, like, was a really cool and, I mean, subtle in so much that they didn't reference it, but very overt fashion for both of them.
Because otherwise, really cool. If it was just a mom like, oh, where are you going? It built stakes into his relationship with her and wanting to get out of that and... The awesome antagonism with him and the bullies, and then when he steals the car. And like I said, we've talked a lot about the writing term save the cat. This movie literally saves the cat, where he's being chased backwards after stealing the dickhead guy in the bar's car, the son of his stepdad. And he's being chased in an awesome reverse car chase, where he's going in reverse and the cops are in front of him. And they're waving like I used to wave to people in the back of our Volvo with the seats in the back.
Yeah.
I don't know if you had this. We had a station wagon as kids with the seats in the back trunk. And we'd sit in the back and on the freeway, we'd wave to people. And at first, on the car ride, they'd be like, hey, and they think it's cute. But then, like, an hour and a half later, when we're still like, they're like, oh, fucking, come on, kids.
Yeah.
Just do something else other than wave at us.
Go to a rest stop or something.
Let us get around you.
Yeah.
Anyway, so when he's going in reverse, he sees a cat in the road and literally swerves out of the way and slams into a car, doesn't let the cat die. Which is, in writing terms, is showing the hero doing something redeemable so that even if they're an anti-hero, we side with them. And then he lets his friends leave, too, and then he crashes into the cop car.
Mm-hmm.
And then he calls from the badge, the number, and Harry shows up. And then things start rolling from there. And I think the thing that this movie really does well is it combines the training montages with character development in between and furthering the villain plot with Harry as well. Because...
Yeah.
A lot of times, movies like this, they come to a full stop and do, like, a 10-minute super-fast training montage. And this one really lets you get to know the people that are trying out, for the most part, like, the main three, the Charlie, Roxy, and Eggsy. You get to know the main three, and you get to really see the shit they got to go through instead of just, like, hey, we're going to train and shoot stuff. You know, like, I feel like we always get skimped out on why this all happens. But I forgot the bar fight. First,
yeah,
because let's play that clip. Clip number two, the bar fight is fantastic. Yep, that's
the one.
I've had a rather emotional day, so whatever your beef with Eggsy is, and I'm sure it's well founded, I'd appreciate it enormously if you could just leave us in peace until I finish this lovely pint of Guinness.
So good,
yeah.
And then they say, you know, fuck off, old man, or whatever. And then he goes and locks the door and says, "Manners maketh man." And then uses his umbrella to scoop a beer mug up, clocks him in the face. And then one of the craziest fight scenes I'd ever seen up until now happens, where he punches a guy's tooth out and it slow motion moves and the other guy dodges it. He shoots an electric like dart into another guy's neck. There's all kinds of crazy shit that happens. It's awesome.
And then to cap it all off, when the bartender comes out and he's like, "What?" And then he gives him the amnesia dart into the neck.
So good.
But that was my favorite part.
The bulletproof umbrella.
Yeah.
And then switching it to stun and basically shooting a hockey puck at the guy's face and flipping. Because the physics of this movie is just wacky enough that that the violence, when it happens, even when it is kind of brutal, it's funny, you know?
They also like shoot it in a way where you don't worry about the physics. Like, it's so mind-bending the way they're constantly moving the camera that you're like, there's no way that could happen.
Exactly.
It's just like, I don't know.
If it
could have.
If it was shot super gritty and like realistic, then you'd be like, why did he just flip like like 7 feet in the air.
Right. This is my other favorite thing was when they like he very casually is talking to Eggsy about like I know this about you, this about you, and he was like, I know that you were a savant in gymnastics. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
What?
It's so good. Like, because they set up how he could do all this stuff, and it's amazing.
Yeah, I know it makes sense for like the what the character will need to do, but it's like, for real? Like, is that something that people like?
People can be a savant in gymnastics.
Guys on the street are just like, I gotta go to gymnastics practice.
Yo, yeah. Listen, bruv, I'm a savant in gymnastics, bruv, all right? That's my worst Cockney I've ever done.
You nailed it.
So he kicks the shit out of those guys. Let's skip ahead a little bit where he goes into training. And they reference, like, have you ever seen Pretty Woman? Trading Places, Nikita. And then he's like, oh, you mean like My Fair Lady? Which is funny because he's Cockney and so is My Fair Lady, which is a little fun inside joke there. He's looking in the mirror when he first shows up because Eggsy kind of doubts himself being a gentleman. And can we play clip number 3?
What do you see? Someone who wants to know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah, that's what I would say after I saw a dude just wreck people with an umbrella.
For real.
You know?
For real. After I was, like, all the things that happened, after he was in jail and called a number on the back of a medallion, and all of a sudden he's out of jail, and then some old dude just whooped 6 bullies' asses in a bar.
Yeah.
Amnesia darted a bartender.
That's the appropriate response.
Yeah.
Because I think often in movies they don't do that. They're like, this is so cool. I think people would be like, what the fuck is happening here?
Yeah.
This is awesome, but I don't know what's going on.
It's like the Men in Black beginning, where he's like... what I just showed you, if you want any part of this. And he's like,
yeah, nope. So then we get Sam Jackson talking to a silhouette of Obama. And
that was another part where I was like, all right, just show Obama then. Yeah. Like, we don't need this.
I thought it was hilarious. But so Sam Jackson is going around recruiting world leaders for something. We're not really sure yet. Can we play clip number 4?
Because the last time I checked, the planet was still fucked.
So this... Let's just get into. I want to play a couple sound clips just while we're talking about the motive, because I think the best thing about a spy movie is when the villain has a good motive and a fun end of world scenario. And I think it's hard to come up with a unique original one that's not we got the codes to the nukes or how many superhero movies. Even though I love most of the superhero movies that come out, how many of them end with a fucking lightning ray going to the sky with a cloud of debris.
Right,
it's like
right.
That you have to take out the one mothership. And this, I think I have a sound clip of his manifesto, and it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Can we play clip B3? What? Oh, I emailed it to you. Maybe you didn't get that. Check the later email. We'll keep talking. That's all right. I have 4 clips in there. It's okay. We'll figure it out. Basically, his manifesto is that... that there's global warming and that it's that the body heats up when you're sick and you have a fever to mm-hmm. fight the virus.
Mm-hmm.
And humankind is a virus on our planet, and global warming is the planet trying to fight off the virus. So he's proposing a mass depopulation of the planet via these SIM cards that he's, and it's brilliant too, because who wouldn't take free internet and free cell phones right now?
Sure. And I think
no one would question if Mark Zuckerberg came out right now and was like, I'm gonna give you guys free internet and free cell phones, we've made enough money with Facebook, thank you everybody.
Yeah, I think after seeing this movie I would be like, eh,
yeah,
no
maybe,
thanks,
maybe I'll just keep paying for it.
Yeah, I have Spectrum. I'm okay.
I have Spectrum. Did you find him, Steve? It's okay. If
No worries.
B3, I just explained, so you can put the other ones in. It's no problem.
Yeah, so I think the gist of what he says also is that, like, either when a virus happens, so he's saying either the virus will kill the host or the host will kill the virus.
And either way...
And either way, everything...
We're fucked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of true with what's going on right now. Like, our planet cannot sustain us.
Yes.
So I'm not advocating this kind of thing.
Nope.
Maybe colonizing Mars. That'd be cool. Let's do some space travel first.
Okay, let's try some other stuff.
Let's try some other stuff before we go to this extreme Valentine.
Or we say citizens kill everyone.
You know, but it is a motive where you at least understand the logic behind what the villain is doing, even if the way he's going about things is deplorable and
sure.
and awful.
Sure. It's cool that, like, so he's introduced as a villain. We know that he is the villain. But he's also a character that, like, no one in the movie perceives to be a villain.
No.
He's, he has these...
He's a billionaire philanthropist.
Yeah, these virtues that everyone knows him
for. It's basically as if Al Gore went nuts after an Inconvenient sequel and was like, you know what? Fuck all of you. No one's listening. The EPA is being rolled back. Everything. The administration sucks right now. Mm-hmm. Coal's coming back. Are you fucking kidding me? And he just goes, you know what? I'm just gonna give everybody free film cards.
Is that your Al Gore?
I tried. I went out on a.
All right.
Can you do Channing Tatum Al Gore?
Doing Al Gore? I'm just gonna give everyone a free SIM card.
There we go. Ah, your Channing Tatum always makes me laugh.
There it is.
So it's a motive that makes sense, and he's going around recruiting celebrities. They keep saying like Iggy Azalea is missing.
I love that when they just randomly were like Iggy Azalea. We haven't seen her in a while,
which is so great because I mean no one has really lately in real life. So what happens though? Mark Hamill plays the professor. He gets recruited. Harry goes and finds him, and as he's about to give away something, his neck starts glowing, and then his brain and head explodes all over Harry. Harry's like blinded and disoriented, and these guys come in and he throws his grenade lighter, and then he's knocked out in a coma for a little while we do the training, which by the way, the skydiving sequence is so good in
it's
the training.
Tremendous.
Because a lot of times skydiving sequences look really hokey, and this movie does a good job of, you can tell it didn't have the biggest budget on the planet, but it still makes, because of its style, it makes up for some of the green screen stuff that they hide it really well in this movie.
It also, like, I don't know how long it takes to skydive, but they...
It's the longest fall ever.
We hung with them for, like, the whole thing. That wasn't an edited skydive.
Yeah.
That was, like, we're just here and we're
and the whole premise is that
you.
They have to dive and hit this target and not get on... And if you miss the target, you're on the radar and you're out.
Yeah.
And then he throws in Merlin, a.k.a. Mark Strong, who's one of the biggest badasses out there. He says, one of you doesn't have a parachute. And so they're all panicking. And of course, everybody shits the bed on it except for the three leads that we've been following, Charlie, Roxy, and Harry, Eggsy. And then it turns out they all had a parachute.
Yeah.
Which I almost pulled that sound clip because I love it when he's like, you have a complaint, you come here and whisper it in my ear. And I was like, that's such a great line.
Yes.
Could you imagine that just being like so authoritative that it's like... You have a complaint, you come in and whisper it in my ear.
I would be like,
fuck off.
No, I'm all right.
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm going to say it from over here because you sound like you're about to be violent.
You sound like you're
going to
be super violent.
I don't want to have any part of that, yeah.
So, we got to, did you get clip B1? Let's do B1 because this is great. This is where this movie basically shows its card, says like, hey, this is how we're going to be in case you aren't caught up. About an hour in, they're like, in case you haven't figured this out yet, this is how we play. B1.
You like spy movies, Mr. DeVere? Nowadays, they're all a little serious for my taste. The
sure.
old ones.
Yeah.
Marvelous. Give me a far-fetched theatrical plot any day.
The old Bond movies. Oh, man. Oh, when I was a kid, that was my dream job. Gentleman spy.
I always felt the old Bond films were only as good as the villain. As a child, I rather fancied a future as a colorful megalomaniac.
What a shame we both had to grow up.
What a shame we had to both grow up. How, this is also what I love about these kind of movies, where they give a plausible reason for the main bad guy and the main good guy to face off and have a tête-à-tête, like a cool verbal sparring before the violence kicks in, before the fighting kicks in, and they get this twice in this movie, and it's so fun.
And it's basically
they
like
always think they have the upper hand on each other.
Yeah, like a touch gloves moment.
It's
like
so good.
In a boxing match where they right before
there's
they start beating
that,
the shit out of each other, they're just
there's
like
not that's like when you have a built up relationship between the villain and the hero, or the hero's mentor, then the showdown at the end has that much more weight. When it's like you wait till the end of the movie to see the two fight, like. There's tons of movies like Wonder Woman's one of my favorite movies of the year, but I don't want to spoil it. But the villain that comes up towards the end, it's just like it kind of comes out of left field, and it's a cool reveal. But there hasn't been that. I guess there is. They earned it to a degree. Don't get me wrong. I loved Wonder Woman. I just think the villains weren't as well developed, and that's something that's really important to me in, mm-hmm. in movies. Now I feel like I'm going to get attacked. It's in my top five. Wonder Woman's in my top five this year. I just think the villains were a little underdeveloped. I love Chris Pine and Gal Gadot.
Did everyone hear how he said Chris Pine first?
Oh Jesus, that's not what I meant. #feminism. Shit, Gal Gadot is my favorite. Are you kidding me? Anyways, so let's play clip number five because this is when he's Sam Jackson is pissed off because he really loved Luke Skywalker.
Fuck that guy, whoever he is. I'm gonna. Made me kill Professor Arnold. Goddamn, love Professor Arnold.
It's so good. It's so good. And then he's explaining this really elaborate machine that he's built, where he's getting his hand imprinted on it, so only he can set this off. Because, and that's the thing, he also has responsibility as a villain. He takes responsibility for his own actions.
Yeah.
So only he is going to make this decision. He doesn't want this falling into the wrong hands or a second in command like in The Rock. You know, he's not going to pull an Ed Harris on this where for somebody sure. can call a mutiny, where Gazelle can call a mutiny and do it. And so play clip number six, please.
This is an extremely dangerous machine. It should only be operated by someone as responsible and sane as me.
I think you pulled that clip just for all the lisping in it.
Yep. Yeah, it was just, I should have named that clip Lisps.
Lots of S's.
Lisp.
But I love that. And I love the, when Harry takes Eggsy to the gadget room, and you got all these sweet weapons. You got the lighter that explodes. You have the electroshock pinky ring. You have the blade in the shoe that has poison on it.
Yeah.
There's all these amazing Bond-type gadgets, and then they show like the iPads and smartphones that are our current technology, and they're like, no, the real world has caught up to spy technology with that. And so it's like they had iPads decades before
us.
Which is just great. It's so great. And then we talked about the Taylor sequence. I got to skip ahead a little bit because we only got about 10 minutes. Unless we have a couple minutes to spare, let me know in the booth, Steve. I feel like this is every week.
Every week.
Yeah, all right. Cool. So in the Taylor scene, can we play clip number seven?
Oh, I have trouble understanding you people sometimes. You all talk so funny.
You know, it's funny, when I watched Billy Elliot as a kid, my mom and dad did not like the movie because they couldn't understand their accents. And recently, my in-laws watched a Jim Jeffries stand-up special, and again, couldn't understand their accents. And both times they were like,
oh, I have trouble understanding you people sometimes. You all talk so funny.
And I'm like, they don't talk that funny.
No.
Actually, they talk kind of more proper than us.
They talk regular.
I get it if it's like the Scottish, like a Scottish, thick Scottish, like, and you're like, I don't know what that was. Or even like super Cockney, like, or like pikey, like
Brad Pitt.
Pikey Brad Pitt's character in Snatch. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. That's tough.
You know, or Arseface on Preacher, if you've seen that, where they subtitle him.
There you go.
You know, I'm just throwing out let's just spend the rest of the show.
List the people who talk funny.
But that's the thing. It's like or accents that are strong. But that's why I was like, Mom and Dad, Jim Jeffries doesn't talk that. He just has an Australian accent.
Right. He's still saying English words.
Whatever.
Yeah, I don't
anyway,
know.
It's all
I don't know.
Parents.
From what I understand,
they just don't understand.
Hey.
Damn it. Oh, I stole that shit.
Second Will Smith.
Did I steal that? Were you going to say that?
No.
Oh, okay. 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 So then the greatest scene ever, which I don't want to go into too much detail because it's an incredible sequence and you just have to witness it, is the scene where Harry goes because he gets a lead that there's something going to happen at this basically Westboro Baptist church where they're a hate group and they're saying the most vile shit on earth. So they set up, before Harry kills everyone in this church, they set up that these are the most awful human beings on the planet. They're saying the most racist, sexist, just anti-gay, anti-everything statements you could imagine, which I can't imagine the guy that got cast as this preacher.
Poor guy.
Like, what were the auditions that day? Just spewing the worst things.
What were the preparations for the auditions?
Watching
like,
Trump speak?
Just like a dude in his apartment.
I did it. Damn it.
We
tried.
But that isn't politics. You're talking about Trump, the businessman,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, we're not talking about politics.
Anyways, but it's the craziest, most vile shit. And then, so they set up that who cares what happens, right?
Yeah.
And when they turn up the SIM cards, we watch for the first time what's going to happen if this gets unleashed. And Harry goes full on feral, just like Wolverine berserker rage on everyone, to Freebird by Lynyrd Skynyrd, and it's one of the greatest sequences I've ever seen in an action movie.
It's so phenomenal, and it took me probably a quarter of the sequence to realize what was happening, because they don't set up what Sam Jackson's plan is, or like what the fuck is happening right now. He just like our good guy starts killing,
and then everybody else starts murdering,
and they're all fighting each other. But so
he's the best is when he like shoves the lighter into a dude and then throws him against the altar, and the guy like. He hits so hard, his like body crumbles.
Yeah.
Like, he breaks all spine and neck, and then his body explodes. He pulls off another pole and shoves it in the main preacher's neck, and the guy's like sliding down. An axe to the neck. You just have to see it. It's too much to explain.
He
and it's made to look like one shot.
And he runs out of clips. Like that's my favorite because you know when like people just have unlimited bullets in their handgun.
And he takes the clip and he shoves the parts of the gun in a guy's neck.
Yeah,
it's insane.
Yeah,
it's so good.
But so right before that, he's wanting to leave the church, and this woman won't let him out because they're in the middle of service. And to get out, he says, I think it's
clip eight.
I'm a Catholic whore, currently enjoying Congress out of wedlock with my black Jewish boyfriend who works in a military abortion clinic. So hail Satan, and have a lovely afternoon.
The best is, so hail Satan, and have a lovely afternoon.
Yeah.
The reason this movie is even better is because of how dry and British the humor is.
Yes.
Like, it's perfect. That line is delivered perfectly. And whoever knew Colin Firth could be such a badass action hero, because he proves it in this scene. It's fantastic.
He's phenomenal.
Oh my god,
I'm running out of words for Colin.
And can we play clip number B2, because this is after the shootout happens, when he has a little square off with another one of his verbal sparring before getting shot in the face by Sam Jackson.
You know what this is like? It's like those old movies we both love. Now I'm gonna tell you my whole plan, and then I'm gonna come up with some absurd and convoluted way to kill you, and you'll find an equally convoluted way to escape.
Sounds good to me.
Well, this ain't that kind of movie.
And now that they've revealed in the trailer, spoiler, if you haven't
seen
the trailer,
that
Harry's still alive, watching it again, I realize how he could be. Because Sam Jackson looks away before he shoots him in the face.
Right.
And they make it look like it just grazes the side, and then no one checks to see if he's dead.
Sure.
They just walk off.
So having seen the trailer first, before I saw the trailer for the sequel, before I saw this movie, I saw that he was alive, and I thought he was going to come back in this movie. So I was, I had like my own surprise of him, like, just they assume that he's dead the whole time.
Seeing it before the second one, when he gets shot, it's shocking. When you don't know he's...
Sure.
You're just like... Renee and I were both like... I think Renee went like, oh no! Because you love his character. And I remember thinking, during that church scene, I was like, how are they going to redeem him after this? Like, he just brutally murdered all these people. Like, how do you walk away from that? It's not like a Wolverine comic where it's like, oh, I was under mind control, and they kind of gloss over it and retcon and stuff. But like this, it's like, how do you... like, justify to an audience this, and then they shoot him in the head, and I'm like, oh, okay,
there you go.
But now we'll see.
Well,
in the sequel.
But and also, like, this is something they did that movies don't do, is that he's like, him and Eggsy are the main protagonists, but him, like, he is the one that sets the table.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the movie,
he's the moral compass too.
Yeah, in the middle of the movie, he goes into a coma. And then in the end of the movie, he goes on a killing spree and is shot to death.
Never seen that.
I mean, yeah, like, why would a movie do that? It's broke so many rules of the film, but like, it just made the structure so fun to watch.
So Eggsy suits up. It's Eggsy, Merlin, and Roxy together. They go off to the snow mountain. Sam Jackson's bummed because they have a two-hour countdown, and everybody's really somber. And Gazelle's like, maybe it's because you're about to commit mass genocide that everybody feels bad.
Right.
And it's basically all the elite, all the rich people, all the most powerful people. It has a cool class struggle. Metaphor where they show like all the working class about to get totally fucked over by this, and all the rich are up in their mountain castle living it up.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam Jackson tries to rally the troops with clip number 9.
Hey yo, everybody lifting up. Hello, hello. What the fuck is wrong with you people? I just want to remind you that today is a day of celebration.
There you go. Your favorite.
It's too much.
We got to keep going because we only have 2 minutes left. Eggsy shows up, orders a drink in the best way. And not a martini shaken, not stirred.
Mm-mm.
Can we have Eggsy's drink order, number 10?
Martini. Gin. not vodka, obviously, stirred for 10 seconds while glancing at an unopened bottle of vermouth.
So good. While glancing at an unopened bottle of vermouth is fantastic.
It's the best way to phrase it.
It's ridiculous. Let's play Taking a Piss, number 11.
Are you taking a fucking piss?
I'm afraid not.
Which, by the way, when a British person first said that to me, I was like, no, I already went. I'm good.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, that means, like, are you fucking with me? I love that phrase. I would rather say that than are you fucking with me, because it sounds... Why are phrases in British vernacular so much more classy? Like, taking the piss is way more classy than...
Do you feel like taking a piss is a classy phrase?
You know what? Now that you say it, I am corrected. I stand corrected. Maybe it's just the accent, guys. I love the accent.
It's more fun.
It's more fun. There we go.
For sure.
Can we play? We got to keep moving along. But so there's this awesome action sequence in the end. Gazelle and Eggsy fight, and it's fucking fantastic. You should just watch it. And then he ends up killing her with a poison cut. And it's just the ballet of it. It's like a ballet with her bouncing around. And she's, I think, a real gymnast or she's trained in this shit. And she's blown up since then. She's been in Star Trek, Mummy, Atomic Blonde. Anyways, let's play clip number 12, which is them taking the Bond innuendo to 11.
If you save the world, we can do then the asshole.
I like that. It's a question.
Yeah, it's a question. Anyways. He's
slightly up inflection.
So then he impales Sam Jackson with Gazelle's leg. And as Sam Jackson's dying, can we play the final clip we have time for before?
Oh, man. It's the part where you say something really bad, hun.
It's like you said to Harry. This ain't that kind of movie, bruv.
Yes.
Nice.
To me, that's the perfect way to end the show, because it's the perfect way to end the movie. Yeah. And then we get a butt shot, but, you know, whatever. Then,
which is,
you know,
also a perfect
way to end this movie.
Yeah.
And then we get the great redemption moment of him wrecking his stepdad with the same way Harry did. And we get the full arc of him becoming a Kingsman.
Yeah.
This movie, I cannot recommend this enough. If you haven't seen Kingsman, well, we just ruined it for you. So I hope you saw it before watching this episode. But go see the new one. I'm going to see it this weekend, and I can't wait to hear your thoughts. I'll let you know after I've seen it, so don't fucking spoil it for me if you see it before me. I have a kid. I can't go opening day, all right? But Jesse, where can they find you before next time?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at TooMuchJesse, for sketch at The Prom Losers.
You can find me at The Ben Begley. You can find us at GuiltyMovieGuys. Tweet us your suggestions. We're always down. Like we said last week, it only takes two votes. We have a low bar. And until next time, remember, manners maketh man.
Citizen Kane?
Yes.
The producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Spiegel, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.